Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Sometimes golf is a pain in the butt. You hit your ball in the trees and then you lip out the putt. But if you've got a little time, and come and spend it with us. Cause now you're listening to The Rough Cut.
Hello, 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 and welcome down to another episode of The Rough Cut Golf Podcast, and today we have major winning and golfing legend Mr. Padraig Harrington as a guest. As you can see, he is not currently with us.
Padraig, come out now.
We recorded the podcast over in Ireland, and that will be coming up very shortly. We'll chat through the trip that we had to Ireland, and then also some other news from the golfing world, mostly the online golfing world, because no one else cares about the rest of it. Mick, Kieran, Jake, how are we?
Hello. Excellent. Yes, very good. Thank you.
Very good.
I've got a cushion and a blanket with me today because I'm going to sit back and let you and Kieran just tell me the wonders of Ireland.
Yeah.
As me and Mick did not have the opportunity to go.
No, we didn't get to have any Guinness, any whiskey, any Irish golf.
Yeah, and we did all of that.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's basically the trip. Like, that's encapsulated. Throw in Padraig.
Throw him in there.
Chuck him in there. So we stayed at Portmarnock Resort, which has the Jameson Golf Links attached. Now, this is not Portmarnock Golf Club.
Right.
There's a difference. There's a lot of Portmarnocks out there.
Sounds confusing.
We stayed at the resort with that Jameson Golf Links attached, which hasn't anything to do with the Jameson's distillery.
What?
It's just because of the historic links with the Jameson family.
That is true. He is buried on the first hole on the right-hand side.
Oh, my gosh.
There's loads of people.
All of them.
There's not just one guy.
There's one
James is like a massive tomb.
Do they continually get buried there? Or have they stopped doing that now?
I think they might have stopped doing it now.
So hold on.
I don't know.
If you toe shank it off the first, you might hit a gravestone.
Yeah. I mean, it's about 2AE. You've got to fly it. But it's possible.
Shotscope the funny thing.
I did. There's 250 to a bunker on the right, and then it was 280 to carry it into the
three wood.
So hybrid, to be safe. Yeah. I wasn't going anywhere near it. Like, I don't want to annoy any ghosts, especially on one of our first days.
Good story, though.
We got chased out of Ireland by the ghost of a whiskey distiller.
And clip it.
That could work. I think Portmarnock is the first, Portmarnock Golf Club is the first place we played, and it went literally straight up into top 10. Easy.
That's pretty incredible for you who have played some flaming good golf courses.
Yeah.
We did have a question in the Discord about where in your top 10 it would be, and then what the other nine in the top 10 would be around it.
Wow. It's a whole podcast episode.
So maybe we do. I mean, we could do an extended clip right now where you talk us through it, or you could prepare it for next time.
I think I need to prepare it. Okay. I need to sit down in an armchair with my pipe and just like go through everything. As in like an old man pipe, not like a crack pipe. I say not like my crack pipe, like you have one.
I'm not using this one. I'll use this one.
It's an old man pipe kind of even.
Roaring crack fire. Kind of evening. Yeah.
Roaring fire. Like in Big Fat Quiz of the Year, where they read a celebrity's autobiography.
Yeah.
That'll be you.
A few dogs. Oh. A few Irish red setters in there.
That's a dog.
Many leather-bound books, all that kind of jazz. And some cheese.
Jazz.
And wine.
Yeah. A whole wheel of cheese. It's amazing.
No, I think more like a selection.
Okay.
Strong cheddar.
Yeah, three fingers of Glenlivet or Jameson with some pepper.
I was going to say, it can't be Glenlivet. My God.
No, sorry.
Unbelievable.
Can't have that.
But it was fantastic. The golf
very,
course.
Very, very long. Long golf course.
Was it? It was. Long golf course. I made an error. Like when the video comes out, you will see this, but it's about 7,300 yards off the backs, off like the blue tees.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. And I thought, I want to experience the golf course. You know, I want to play it in its entirety. So I teed off the blues. And we got out of the car. It's a bit windy. It's fine. Got onto the first tee, and it was blowing about 30 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it was freezing.
So not only 7,300 plus, also 2-club wind.
I swear this is true. Every single par five is over 600 yards or near enough. Every single one was into the wind.
Yeah. What?
Every single one was into the wind.
You always get
wind.
Those rounds as well, and it's like even when you turn back, it's like it's still
how is it into my face again?
I've just come down.
I'll allow Kieran to bleep this out, but there was one par five where hit off the tee, laid up. And it was about 120 yards. And I thought, right, I'm going to chip like a 9-iron in.
Yeah.
Hit this 9-iron and halfway to the green, the wind just went and literally blew this ball. I want to say it blew it about 30 yards short and left.
Wow.
It literally stuck fingers
up. Yeah, it did, yeah.
A humbling experience for you then.
I've never seen anything like it.
For you who is... not notoriously, but like quite well known to be quite long off the tee at times. Was it like then driver on every hole?
Yeah, basically. Just trying to think of when I didn't hit a driver off a par four or par five.
Any par three drivers?
no. Oh, that did it. Good shot. Well, we almost had a hole in one.
Yeah, oh, did we?
Yeah.
Still yet to have one on the channel.
However, you know, we're not going to talk about that too much. I don't want to give too much away. It's worth a watch. Brilliant course, fantastic, and it just honestly just went straight up there. Just like the history and the whole vibe of the place.
Yeah, I think that's what you're quite good at as well. And I think when you ask people to rank their favorite golf courses, usually it kind of depends on if you've played really well there.
Yeah,
then it will always stick in your head. Yeah. Which is not to say you didn't play well there, but if you can take the golf actual element away from it and just appreciate the course for what it is, then definitely it's good to hear. It's in the top 10.
It was a different. I think when you get to like a historic links and the feel of the place and the setting of it as well, because like the actual land it's on is flat.
Very flat.
Mm. It's so, so flat. There's dunes and stuff on the course, but the actual land it's on is incredibly flat. Like the drone footage we got just looks insane. Mm. It looks so, so cool.
Cool.
And like the clubhouse, they've actually redone it, but it's still historic. It's got like so much stuff in there. They're really friendly. Good soup. All these things add up to make a very pleasurable experience. Yeah. So Port Marnock was great.
Cool. Very, very good.
On the other end of the scale as far as hills, we play Podrick at the European Club.
Good.
Have you ever heard of the European Club before?
I had heard the name and had not ever seen a single photo and or drone. I think there isn't anything.
Yeah.
Of the course. And then I looked it up before you went on the trip. And I thought, oh, it's... Looks cool. Yeah, it looks nice.
Which needs more of a mention of their website?
Oh, honestly, like I was
excellent.
We were scared.
I was actually a little bit worried about going there because like some of the rules and the regulations they had were wild. Yeah. It's like personal photography. You are permitted to take 5 or 6 photos of the day.
Oh,
yeah.
And I was like, this. I had this thing where I was like, this can't be real.
Mm.
Like there was something that wasn't quite right about it.
Yeah.
And when we actually got there, we kind of discovered that it was more to do with the owner being out there.
Yeah.
Honestly,
I've never quite met anyone
eccentric.
Like him.
We met him.
Like amazing.
Right. Okay.
Funny.
Okay.
Seemed like the nicest guy ever, but just like out there. Yeah.
That was my one takeaway when I searched the website up, because not only does it look like it was made in the 1970s, but like the first line I think on the homepage is, if you want to book a tea time, like you can ring up. And most likely one of the blah-de-blah family will pick up, and then listed about four of the most strongest Irish names that you could probably think of in your entire life. I was thinking a bit more.
There's a lot of letters in there.
Jerry was one of them.
Oh, right, was it? Yeah. It was like Tag and Finley, Padraig.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, they're all, from what I understand, they're all sort of family members, aren't they?
It's all just family run.
You've got this amazing golf course. And then run by families. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
It was Pat, wasn't it?
It was Pat. Pat Ruddy just came
Ruddy.
Down, sat next to us, and just started blurting stories.
Are we talking eccentric in terms of personality? Are we talking in dress? Are we talking just as a person?
As a person, as a character. Every now and again, like you'll sit down with someone or you'll start talking to someone, and you kind of know that they're just a little bit different, you know, they're bringing a different energy to the conversation. Yeah. And this Pat had basically designed the golf course, constructed the golf course, and we're still there.
At any point did it cross your mind that we should do a podcast with this guy?
Potentially it would have been a 6-hour long podcast.
It'd be a long one. Each story would be, you know, 20 minutes long, and he'd stand up and get the mic and it would twist the
it was like he had a walking stick and he sat down and he just started chatting about kind of the course and like about his life and about who he was, and then stood up and like started doing some practice swings and like talking about
with the cane.
Yeah, with the cane. He was at a table, took a light out.
Oh wow.
Oh,
and then I guess when you own it, you can do what you want, I guess.
Honestly, it was fantastic.
It reminds me a little, the way you're describing him reminds me of a little bit of the first time I met Jimmy Bullard. And you're like, oh, this person's like a bit different.
Yeah.
Like the energy's just way high. You're like, they're very excited about everything. Mm. The stories are always good.
Yeah. But this is the thing is like, he was excited, but like there was some, you know, as Irish, you know, men tell stories and women tell stories, like they're just, it's like, I don't know how to describe it.
They're natural storytellers.
Yeah, they're just natural. But some of them was no emotion, was it? There was not a lot of emotion on some of them. Like he was just sort of saying all this and, you know, keeping a very sort of straight face and then moving on to the next one. And like, you know, we barely talked, did we?
We didn't get a chance.
It was just like,
to be honest, it was fine.
Story after story after story.
And the course that he's built at European Club is it's crazy. It's kind of out there. Mm.
So you said it was a contrast to Portmarnock. Mm. Was that with regards to the flatness, the profile of the course, or difficulty, or distance, or weather? Like, what was the differences?
So Portmarnock is a classic links. It's traditional. You can see that it's been there for 100 plus years, and it's used the landscape and it's been carved in.
They've got ghosts.
Many ghosts. Yeah. Like the European Club is much more like a modern links. Mm. There's a lot more kind of dramaticness in the dunes and the elevation changes, and all the bunkers are basically sleep aligned, not revetted. Mm. It's very hard. Very hard golf course.
Mm. Tight.
Very tight. It's just a different way to do a links course. Mm. Like, okay, completely different. And, I mean, you'll see when the video comes out as well, just epic. Like, the views and everything was just fantastic. Jameson Golf Links, which we played last, is like a combo of the two.
Right.
Because it's like a newish links with a bit more moundage.
Look that up in the dictionary. Moundage doesn't exist, I don't
and
reckon.
They've just like redone quite a lot of the holes, so there's new holes in there, even though it's like 30 years old. Like they've refashioned it and done a fantastic job. But I've not even heard of this place before we went, and we went out on the first day, did a little bit of filming, some club comparisons, and I was like, is it really good?
where has this course been?
Yeah. It's like, this is a really cool course. Like, little quirky details. Greens were great. And I was like, should probably do another video. Yeah,
we should be coming back here.
And we filmed a video after the podcast with Podrig, where he gives a telling off. Well, the match with Podrick, which we didn't really discuss that too much in the podcast, did we?
Not loads, no.
So you have to wait for the match to see Podrick.
We'll be in there.
Podrick, give me a psychology lesson.
Yeah, that was your sort of persona, your character of that one was brilliant. You played well. I'm just going to put it out there. You played really, really well. What Podrick said just like ingrained in you, and it's going to be such a... like an angle of the video. I'm really, really excited for it.
Well, I kind of think that if we're spending time with literally a multiple three-time major champion who's done everything in golf, like if he offers you some advice,
you probably should
take it on board.
Yeah.
So probably understand he knows what he's on about.
Yes, it's the same advice that everyone has been giving you ever since they saw you play golf forever, Peter Finch. Except now that it comes from someone who's won the Claret Jug multiple times. Yeah. Now you're like, that makes great sense. I'll definitely do that.
It sinks in a little bit. It definitely sinks in a bit.
And then talk to us about Dublin. Because there was Temple Bar's the like place you have to go, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That's like, you got to tick that off your list. But I saw a receipt from Kieran.
Yeah.
Well... To be fair, like it was the last night.
Okay.
It was the last night. So
no more filming required.
Yeah, we'll go out, we'll have a nice time. And I got given the contact details of like the media executive at Jameson's Distillery, which isn't actually a distillery anymore, but it's like just in the middle of Dublin.
God, this is so confusing.
It's so confusing. But lovely building, really,
it's
really nice.
It's like sort of teepee kind of shape, is it not?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about there. It's
kind of you're like it has a sort of ceramic roof kind of that goes up. No,
no.
And you're experiencing Jacob's mental breakdown.
I've also done that tour. I just thought that's what the building was, but maybe I'm thinking of somewhere else.
How much whiskey did you have?
Oh, not a lot.
I don't need a lot.
I woke up 5 days later. I'm sure I had a ceramic roof.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. The bit we were in was like just the main bar area. But we got the number of this girl. And I was like, I messaged her. I said, listen, we've been said we can have a tour, but I have no idea about kind of what this is. We've just been given your number and said to come down at this time. She was like, right, great. So she got a guy called Killian down who gave us like a behind the scenes tour.
So Irish.
Of this place. We got taken into like the exclusive barrel room.
Oh, nice.
Which is like the most expensive Jameson whiskies. Got a taster in there, took us upstairs, gave us a taster of four more, let me bottle my own bottle of whiskey.
No.
Yeah, straight from the
full size
bottle.
Straight
from the cask. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
750ml.
60.8%.
Yeah.
Sweet baby Jesus.
60.8%. I'm like, what am I going to do with this?
You can fuel my car with it. Like,
I could disinfect wounds on like an 18th century battlefield with this, but apart from that, I mean, I
can clean the inside of this steam engine with it.
Unbelievable. So I'm like, what am I going to do? Anyway, that's at home, so I'll be saving that. And
I didn't bring that in.
No. I'm just keeping that away from you. And then after that is when we went out into Dublin and when it really started to kick off.
Mm.
I will start, and I will let Kieran carry on from this point.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how Kieran, when he gets something in his head, it's so hard to shift him out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he wants to do something,
you're doing it.
It's so hard, and he'll just whine and he'll nag.
Argue with him as much as you want.
Yeah, and he'll just keep.
Excuse me. Do not deny that one. That is exactly what you do.
And nothing exemplified this more than when we left the Jameson Distillery, starving. Like I am talking, ready to eat my own arm off. And Kieran's like, got an idea. Actually, what accent should we do?
That was a bit scouse.
A little bit scouse.
Well, Sam was there.
Sam was there as well.
But he's so tall, you can't hear him anyway.
And we come out of Jameson, and he's like, have you ever had a spice bag? Now, on the streets in Preston.
Yeah, where I'm from. Yeah.
This is a little bit different.
Spice bit there.
My 3 years in Sheffield, I learned what a spice bag was. Not personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe so, that's why you've been seeing the ceramic roofs.
Not personally.
So we had a couple of whiskies, and I thought I'd misheard, because like eventually we just left, and I've got Kieran saying, I want a bag of spice. So I'm like... I don't think that's something we're going to do.
We're on a work trip, for God's sake.
I really don't
take a turn.
Even if we're not on a work trip, like we're not going to do a bag of spice.
You know, together.
This is not something which is appropriate. It's like, no, it's a spice bag, which apparently you go into a takeaway and you ask for a spice bag And beyond that point, it was never quite clear what is in this spice bag, apart from everything. Yeah. I'm doing quotation marks there for the podcast listeners. Can you just explain what a spice bag is?
So you got like, it'd be shredded chicken, you got onions, you got mix of like loads of different spices, chilies, jalapenos. It's just everything. You would have loved it.
Is it just everything from like, is it just like chuck loads of stuff in?
Yeah, yeah. It's mainly you get it from a Chinese, but it's very popular in Dublin. So okay. It's a very popular thing.
Is this like off menu kind of thing, or does it actually get advertised?
Yeah, it's definitely advertised, but it's very much a Dublin.
You have to do like a secret wink and a handshake snack. And you get the spice bag.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put this in here because this then gives a bit of an impression of what happens for the rest of the evening. Okay.
Yeah. Did he get his spice bag?
We're not there.
Okay.
For God's sake.
So we leave there and he's like, spice bag, spice bag, spice bag. I'm like, come on.
Just like, we know.
I'm like, come on. I don't think this. There's so much more to eat. We're walking past like chip shops, pizzas, hog roasts, vegan delis, anything. Like, just give me anything. I'm absolutely starving right now. He's like, no, spice bag, spice bag. It's like, right, fine. Well, let's go in a few bars and discuss this. So we go to the oldest bar in Dublin, have a few Guinness. Come out of there, go to another place, have a few more. End up in Temple Bar, the Temple Bar pub, where Kieran tries to hide so he doesn't get around him.
Here we go.
Well, I mean, I knew obviously how expensive it was going to be in there, so I was like,
Wait, the Temple Bar is like an area, but it's named after the bar.
Yeah, the Temple Bar. Yeah.
The Temple Bar. The Temple Bar pub is famous, but it's also very expensive.
Notoriously expensive.
Okay, so the only thing to note here also is that very tall Sam, who's with you, doesn't drink. Yeah. So
he had a few whiskeys though.
It would have been 2 pints.
Mm. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was 2 pints.
So it wasn't three. You didn't have multiple people.
No.
2 pints.
2 pints.
Yeah. And he hid.
Yeah. No. Well, I got the first round in, and it was lovely.
Yeah. And we'll leave now, won't we? Yeah.
And the music was starting. I was like, oh, I want to listen to some music. What is it? And Kieran's like, oh, no, I know a great place around the corner. And I know this place and I know that place. So, well, I'm actually quite comfortable here. We might actually get a seat. We're having a great time listening to music.
Oh, that's the end of my pint.
Honestly, to get him out of that stool to get into the bar. It looked like he was walking to the gallows.
Tell him how much it was.
It's 20 euros.
20 euros.
Absolute
for
bargain.
2 pints.
For the experience that we had, it was fantastic.
You can't put a price on it.
Anyway, we had a few pints in there. Then we left, went to the grain store.
Old storehouse.
Was that the one that we went to?
Yeah, we've been in there.
Yes.
On the last trip time we went.
Yeah.
We had a few more in there as well. Mm-hmm. Where Kieran was doing some karaoke impromptu.
With a microphone? In front of everyone.
What's the song called?
Oh, Two Fish Bowls. What's it called? Two Fish in a Fish Bowl?
Two Lost Souls Swimming in a Fish Bowl.
Oh, yeah, this.
We're just two lost. What's the song?
I know which one you mean.
Oh God!
Hold on. PA system, microphone in front of everyone.
No. The band was singing this song.
Oh,
and we're two lost souls swimming in a fishbowl.
He was singing along to a live music act.
Yes,
but he didn't know the words.
Excellent.
So it ended up being we're just two fish bowls swimming in a fish bowls with fish. And it was at that point I was like,
spice bag?
We need food. Like, we really need food. I'm struggling here. We're up in 5 hours.
If I remember rightly, the last time we went to that old storehouse, there was a chip shop like next door.
Right next door, you were also very keen to go into.
It was closed by the time we got
there.
So, bear in mind, this spice bag is still hanging over us because Kieran's not allowed us to get anything to eat.
Yeah. He's bought shares in the spice bag industry in the meantime.
And I thought at this point, like, we're past midnight, we've had a lot to drink, and we walk down the street and I'm like, surely this is it now. Surely we can just get something, anything. And we go past this takeaway and Kieran's like, let's go explore. Let's find the spice bag.
Let's go on an adventure, I think I said. Yeah.
Let's go on an adventure. Let's find this spice bag. So eventually, me and Sam just said, enough is enough. We're going in this disgusting-looking takeaway, and we're getting whatever they give us. And we did.
That's you know what? It's the right way to train an animal, is just to be very, very strict and to not let them get away with their nonsense.
Had enough. And by the way, we now know can eat a pizza in 12 seconds.
Yeah, the boy puts it away.
However, it was understandable because we'd been forced to wait for this food all night. Mm-hmm. And then we had to get to bed. 5 hours later, we're back on the ferry.
Spice bag all like... Blah, blah, blah.
We didn't even get a spice bag.
No. And Kieran really wanted a plug to start exporting things and like to get everything on memory cards. So we got on this ferry. And if these guys know, and like, you know, close friends and family, I very much like, you know, when children are having a great time and they're with their parents and, you know, they are the future generations of our nations all across the world, and they should be cared for and looked after, and they should be brought up in a way which betters humanity going forwards. Okay.
I'm Peter Finch and I approve this message.
That's where you stop.
Thank you. However, when I'm a bit hungover and when I just really want to be anywhere else away from screaming kids, would you say that the play centre aboard a pitching ferry would be the best place to plug in a laptop and set up store?
And of course, he's made his mind up.
It was the only place to get a plug, wasn't it?
I could not believe my eyes.
It's the only place to get a plug. And this like team of like a football team coming over, they just come in and Pete just goes, he's just looking around. He's like, this is unbelievable. And then he just like, I can't actually believe what's going on.
Oh my God. Like, there's been many scenarios where I have, when we've all been in a spot of bother. And I'm not exactly proud. I pride myself on this, but this is something I try and keep in mind. I'll never abandon you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's really nice of you. I always feel looked after on a trip.
Yeah, I'll never leave apart from this point.
And we didn't see this him for free.
This is the level.
I stood up and I was like, I've had enough. Yeah. I'm not doing this anymore. Mm. So I just went and sat literally the opposite side of the boat.
Yeah. I think that was the right move to make.
It was.
Yeah.
I got loads of work done.
Oh, right.
It was great. Didn't even have a nap. Ooh. It was fantastic.
Very good.
Very funny. Very funny.
It was hilarious.
There's one thing to, for Kieran's many flaws, there is one thing to be said about his attitude to life. Isn't that everything be all right? Yeah. Everything is be all right. And which is great when you're on one of those trips, because you end up with a great story to tell. Someone who has some incredible stories to tell is Mr. Podrick Harrington. So let's throw to the interview. Mm-hmm. We'll go watch you and Podrick chop it up for half an hour, and then we'll come back, we'll talk about Myrtle, and we'll do Guess a Player.
In this interview, by the way, you will watch me, or listen to me, say pretty much nothing.
Great.
He was just absolutely spitting fire.
Great.
So I was like, Podrick,
let him run.
Here's all your knowledge. Okay, and we are joined here by Podrick Harrington, Mr. Harrington, to everybody watching and listening at home. In the European club house. We've had a full day of filming today. We will not tell you the result, but I was playing Podrick, so you can probably figure it out. How are we, mate? You good?
I'm pretty good, yes, after a good day on the golf course.
Oh, yeah, it was a great day on the golf course. Everyone's happy. We've got Kieran, who is playing producer today, and he's going to shout out intelligent questions that we are going to put to Podrick, and he's going to fill your minds with wonder.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. So, Podrick, you've obviously seen it all. What's your current view of the world of golf at the moment, the professional world of golf? Is it changing for the better or for the worse?
Yeah, it's been strange, because at any given time I've kind of given my opinion, and then a month later it kind of changed. You know, we've obviously seen where Liv was completely on the outside, and now most of the rhetoric is, okay, we've got to do something about this and include them in some way. I never minded having two strong tours. I haven't been a person who was that supportive of having all the best players playing all the time together against each other in the same tournaments. That can actually be, I know it sounds good on paper, but it can get a little bit boring too at times. I liked the old model where European Tour was very strong and we would go and play in the US. We'd have a bit of a chip on our shoulder and we'd want to do well. And, you know, there was a bit of a bit of excitement about that, how a player would do coming from a different tour. So I didn't mind them being two strong tours. Obviously, at the moment with Liv, while they're strong, they're not included. So they're not having, we don't have a situation where we can have a couple of players from Liv come and play PGA Tour events or vice versa. So definitely for sure at this stage, we've seen that on the PGA Tour, we are missing some of our bigger branded players. You know, we're missing some of the anti-heroes, if you want to say it like that. You know, it's hard to believe, but we're missing Patrick Reed. And that's the way it is.
Well, it's what Liv did. They purposely went out and tried to attract the obviously very good players, but also players who were generating news. You know, they didn't want the standard kind of vanilla, if you want to look at it like that, the vanilla type of pro. They wanted people who were going to speak their mind, do slightly controversial things, potentially. But yeah, that's who they went out and got, isn't it?
They did pick the biggest brands in each market. I will say the side effect of this is that, which I was surprised. There was quite a bit on the Masters last week. There was an awful lot of extra expletives from Liv players. And clearly Liv players don't get fined for expletives. And I'm not saying they're encouraged, but they're certainly not discouraged from doing it. So it was interesting that there was those players who might have held back in the past, who are now Liv players, were letting go fully. And I don't mind the odd bit of cursing and a bit of that, but it was a little, you know, there's got to be some sort of some restriction on it in some way. So that was interesting. I'm not saying that's not a big deal or anything.
It isn't, but it definitely felt, especially Tyrrell at some points, like he was leaning into it quite a bit.
Yeah, there's no hold back on Liv on that. And maybe, you know, that's something that I don't want to see going into the game. I'm not against a player breaking a golf club. My when I came out in the game, I would have been very, very strong on the, I still am strong on the etiquette of the game, and I wouldn't break a club, and I would certainly try not to curse or do any of that sort of stuff. But I've mellowed a bit that I don't mind what any other player does as long as he doesn't damage the golf course or affect his playing partners. Mm. So I have no problem. If another player wants to break 14 clubs, I'll actually laugh at him. It's no problem. But I'm not happy if he decides to smash up a piece of ground on the golf course. So anything you want to do to yourself, well, tough on you, fair. If you know, that's fine. And as I said, I think most players find it funny when we see another player losing the head.
Yeah.
But there definitely has to be some moderation on it. There was a little bit too much of it at Augusta. And I wouldn't even have singled out Tyrrell because, you know, Tyrrell is nature.
Yeah.
You know, when Tyrrell was playing in my Ryder Cup, you could see during the year that he was trying to hold back, you know, because he was getting... And I talked to him about it. I said, you know, you can't... He has to be himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't try and... You know, he has to have some freedom in what he does. But I certainly wouldn't have been isolating him. I just thought a few more of those players who were playing probably wouldn't have had as many outbursts. And yes, they did. We've got totally sidetracked. Like I'm coming across here like
this is the best way to do a podcast. Just say yeah. Just.
Yeah, I'm a
go down avenues not expected. Perfect. Love that. Please, Mr. Producer.
Yes, of course. So obviously you're just on the conversation there of like golfers, but who's your favourite golfer at the moment to watch? Obviously we've got Scotty dominating at the moment, but you know, who would be your favourite golfer to watch?
Well, Scotty is fascinating.
Yeah.
I think as good a player he is, maybe not right now at this moment after he's won the Masters, but I think everybody wanted to underestimate him just because, you know, you look at the foot movement and the things going on, and you know, he's not Tiger Woods yet. He's playing like Tiger Woods. He hasn't got the personality in that sense, but you know, take that away, he's a phenomenal golfer and fascinating to watch. And the question is, which again is I think people tend to do this, is he on a run or is this who he is? Is he going to be like this for the next 10 years or is this his 18-month run? I believe, by the way, I've always said every player seems to get 18 months of a golden period. Mm. So like a two-season run where they play better than they have ever played. And generally, once they had the run, they're never going to be as good as that again. Because it's hard to live up to those expectations that of what you thought you were during that run, when really in the run you were probably the same version with a few more breaks and you were a bit more relaxed. But in the end of the day, like you look back at anybody, if they were thinking about their wins, they'll believe that they didn't hit a bad shot during the tournament. Yeah, yeah. Whereas if you looked at it, they hit plenty of bad shots and just hit plenty of good ones to counteract it.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel with Scotty as well. Like I said, he's had that kind of 18, 24-month run, and it was that point where it was him, Rahm and McIlroy who were basically dominating the little stretches. And I don't know, Scheffler just seems to come out the other side of it, and now he has learnt to put okay.
I think he's better than okay. he's on a really nice
PGA Tour standard.
Yeah. he's on a really nice run too. Like he's if you looked at the Masters last week, he chipped and putted the first. Mm. He made a great chip and putted the second, and no stress on the one in the first chipped up stone day. Like you're in the first hole in the last round of a major, I can tell you, you are anxious and nervous to get off to a decent start. He made a solid chip and putt in the first, no stress. A great chip and putt in two. And he made a three, made a great up and down out of the bunker to get it. But he's one under after three and he hasn't played well. So that sort of thing is what a great player does. He hasn't played great, but he settles himself by making a few up and downs. He's got into the round. He feels good. And that is a sign of somebody that, you know, good things are happening. And he's putting nicely. But his ball striking is better than anybody else's by a long way. And the thing that I judge a lot of players on, and I believe Scheffler at the Masters really did this well, the better you are at getting the ball to finish as close to your landing point, the better you're going to score on real good golf courses, on the tougher courses. So when you get the greens firming up, Scotty was the best. You look at shots into 12, he stopped it on a dime on 12. He pretty much stopped it as quick as anybody into 5. I'm just picking a few holes out. Stopped it on the top tier on 6. A lot of times he was getting the ball, you know, no big kick forward and no massive spin back. It was a little bit of spin and good spin control in 9. But his control was brilliant. He spun it back to flag in 10. Just the closer you get it to land and stop, and Scotty's the best in the world at the moment at doing that. I'm interested. I want to see how long this lasts. And the stats guys are the guys who do all that. They're basically saying he's world number one now for, like, nobody can pass him for 6-9 months.
Yeah, it's literally, if he doesn't play for half a year, he's still safe.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary.
It's crazy.
In the modern era where you can think about how many good players there are, but no, he is the man. He seems like he's on a roll. He's not going to stop. Kieran,
yeah,
please.
No, very, very good. Now, obviously, moving away from Tour Pro stuff and more looking towards sort of, you know, something that we're very interested in, YouTube. Starting a YouTube channel, how's that sort of been? What's there?
Yeah, I obviously started doing my lessons during COVID, and I just put them out on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram. I really enjoy giving lessons in pro-ams. So every time I get my pro-am guys, I really enjoy trying to figure out what makes everybody tick. So if some guy comes to me and he says he's a 15 handicap, I'm looking and going, why is he a good 15 handicap? Or why is he a bad one? Why isn't he single figures? And so with that, I kind of said, well, why not do this on social media, direct access? They obviously took off very nicely. And at the end of it, obviously we said, well, we got to do this with a bit more structure. So we started a YouTube channel. Which I've really enjoyed doing. And I'm now at that point right now where it's, do I continue doing it as simply as I do it? Or do I try and make it bigger and better? I don't think I would change the content, but obviously you've got to get more involved if you want to make it bigger. Nobody knows more than yourself. Which is, I suppose I don't want this. I don't want it to be my job. I still consider myself to be a tournament player. But I do also like doing it. I really do like telling people. I'm the youngest of 5 boys, so I think I'm a little bit argumentative, contrarian, and I want to tell you that you're wrong and this is how you should do it.
Well, that's great. I mean, I think with the videos that you're making as well, I mean, obviously you're speaking from such a well of experience. you know, a knowledge base that people do find kind of fascinating. And, you know, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass and stuff, but I genuinely do enjoy watching your videos, because I know that when you're giving a tip and when you're talking about whatever the aspect is of the video, I know it's coming from a place of experience. So, like, for me, you know, it's been a really, really good insight into kind of how you kind of look at golf, and I've learned stuff from the videos, which is, I think, pretty good.
I'm getting quite a bit of I hope you've learned something from the videos, and this is probably something I need to learn from you about presentation or YouTube. I am getting quite a bit of feedback now from pros about my videos. So I'm
love that.
I I've got a few pros now on the Champions Tour and actually on the regular tour. I've had a few as well who will approach me and ask me questions. I can be found wanting when I get asked questions. But, you know, it is interesting. Whereas I feel like I have a wealth of knowledge to help anybody mentally in the game of golf, and I have a wealth of knowledge to help any amateur golfer. I don't feel like I would have a wealth of knowledge. Like if you gave me a really great pro and you said, you know, should he do this in his swing or that in his swing, I'd be kind of, well, you look like you hit it well enough to me, leave it alone sort of thing. It's amazing. If you gave me a really good player, I wouldn't look at his golf swing at all. I'd only look at his routine and his approach and where his head's at. Whereas most of my coaching on these videos, I actually did one or two mental videos during COVID, and they weren't as well received.
It is one of the big paradoxes of when you make a YouTube video. Obviously, if you do coaching videos on, say, chipping, putting, and the mental approach, for the vast majority of amateur golfers, they can make those changes. You know, the vast majority of amateur golfers aren't going to hit the driver like Rory McIlroy, but you can definitely change the short game with the mental. But people don't want to really hear about that. They want to know, well, I want to hit my driver 300 yards.
Yeah, I fall into that category in my own golf. We all feel like we want to fix the golf swing first. And once we have a perfect golf swing, okay, then I'll work on my routine. Mm-hmm. Then I'll work on my mental game, which we don't realize that if we worked on our mental game and our routine, maybe the golf swing doesn't need to be fixed. But unfortunately, this is the paradox of golf. We always think that you can have a golf swing that overcomes your mental game. Basically, it's like this. Most people believe that they can build a golf swing that negates the need for having a great routine and a great mental game, whereas no golf swing can ever overcome your thinking. It doesn't matter. Like, in the end of the day, we can go on social media, we'll find probably 10,000 people who swing the club great on Instagram, who hit the ball great, and they're never going to be a PGA Tour pro. We will find a certain amount, not all of them, but we will find some good PGA Tour pros who genuinely don't hit the ball very well, but they're great mentally. Mm-hmm. So once you get, there's a threshold level. Once you get to that threshold level, and it's not as high as people think, the rest of the game is mental.
Love that.
That's a great answer. Obviously, sticking on the YouTube sort of theme, every year, Pete does a Quest for the Open series. Obviously, I think we sort of talked about it in the video we've just done. Obviously, we've had our match today. What would you say? It could be multiple aspects, it could be one aspect, but like, what aspect of Pete's game would you work on the most? Obviously, coming from a multiple, you know, major winner, you know.
Look, Pete hit the golf ball comfortably well enough to play professional golf at the highest level. Like, his iron shots were, it's not just where they went, they were crispy struck. I'd be happy to hit the ball as well as Pete hit it today. And yet, I'm not giving away the result, but why did he not score?
Yeah.
So it's not a physical thing, it's a mental thing. So he needs a better attitude. So he can't be disappointed with less than perfection. So you're seeking to do everything perfect. And it could be because of YouTube. It could be, you know, there's part of this that you have to put up a good show.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if you have to be prepared, it's a tough one. You're striving for perfection, but you can't ever hold yourself to that level on the golf course. So you need a much better attitude. You'll find a lot in an attitude.
Yeah, I think today as well, because it was a lot of it was like expectation. So obviously I've been looking forward to this for quite some time, and I was like a proper... I felt today, and I want to thank you for this, I felt about 30 years younger, because I was like really wanting to impress you, which it's kind of sad, but it was like, oh, I really want to play well. I don't know.
Look, you hit the ball better than I did out there. There's no doubt about it. You struck the ball better. You hit it further than me off the tee. Your irons were class in a lot of places. So, as regards your golf swing, we talked one thing about you. I think you've, like a lot of people, you've worked on something.
Mm.
You can stop working on it now. You have it, as in you've gone a little bit too far.
Yeah.
So you need to go a little bit back to what you felt before, that the club was a little bit too much in front of you. You need to be able to go back and forth to manage that, you know, nearly borderline. Oh, I've got too much in front of me. Go back to the other. Okay, I'm too much behind me. It's like that metronome. It's always like it's ticking.
Mm.
So, you know, if I was teaching, and I would say this to a lot of amateurs listening in. So most amateurs say, if you're hitting a slice, they think, well, I want to learn how to hit this beautiful straight or say a 5-yard draw. Well, actually, if you've got a slice and you want to get rid of it, you've got to stand in the range and hit the biggest hook you can, like 20, 30, 40 yards of a hook, the worst looking shot. And you've got to keep hitting that for a while. And then when you try and hit a shot, you'll find that your slice is gone.
Mm.
And then if you keep doing that for a while, eventually you'll end up with a hook. And you've got to stop doing that and start hitting a slice. So for most amateurs, they'd be better off going to the range and hitting a big hook and a big slice, and the complete opposites every second shot. And then at least they'll understand.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And what a shut face is an open face. And as they get better, they can reduce how much they're doing it. Whereas most people are going from a big slice to trying to get a square face. And unfortunately, most amateurs do not know what a square face is. So they have some chance of knowing what a shut face and an open face is, but they have very little chance of knowing what a square face is. So you learn by doing the extremes. And you've done a great job. If you're telling me that you were in front of it, now you're just that little bit quick with your body, arms get behind you. So you need a little bit of your old swing. And then you'll find, oh, it's too much of that. I need a bit of this new swing. So it's never going to stay the same. Don't believe it ever will. It always in golf, you go from one to the other and you overdo it a little bit. Okay, now stop that, go back. And hopefully the better you get, the less that moves. That it's only a slight fraction of movement, but it will never stay the same for the rest of your life. There is no golf swing that stays the same.
Okay. Thank you.
That's a lecture.
Yeah. That is a lecture. No, it's great.
By the way, yeah, stay tuned for the videos when they come out, because, it was great. I've learned a lot today.
I think you're pretty good. And as I said to you, I've been watching your swings over the years, and it's amazing by playing more and more how much better your golf swing is really good, and you strike the golf ball really well. So there's no, and you chip well. I noticed there was no problems there, and your putting is fine. Normally when I see a good ball striker who I kind of go, well, why aren't they doing better? And there's always something missing. They've always got a little bit, that guy can't chip and it's going to come back at him, or he's not a good putter. You know, with you don't have a problem all the way through the game. So that must mean that your attitude is off. And as I said today, you're a little quick with those shots when you went to hit the hard shots, that's when you got into a little trouble.
Yeah, accept that. Okay, love that.
Very good. Very good. Just two more questions for you, and this is all from social media. A lot of the questions that we've got given have all been the same sort of around the same sort of topic. Is one is about your favourite win or your favourite moment on tour. What would you say it would be?
I'm sure I've had some good moments. It's easy to go to my wins. I was lucky enough, every time I won at different levels all the way up. So my first win on tour after 10 weeks, unbelievable. Then I won the World Cup with Paul McGinley, unbelievable. Then I got to play in the Ryder Cup, unbelievable. I won a few big events, but then winning my first major in 2007, nothing can be as exciting as winning your first major. But I did mess up the 72nd hole, and it left something wanting. So when I won in Birkdale in 2008, that was incredibly satisfying. You know, the first one was exciting, but the way I won in Birkdale, I won by four shots. I got to wave at the crowd. I hit a great shot in the 71st hole. I swung the club well. I was in the last group. You know, I was in it with Greg Norman, and Greg Norman was like a fairy tale story for the week. So it just was really satisfying, really solid. There was no... There's no doubt it validated the 2007 win. Mm. If I'd only ever won that Open, there would have always been questions about that 72nd hole. Whereas by winning in 2008, it was the validation. And then I won very quickly in Oakland Hills straight away afterwards. And that was an interesting one because, you know, that was obviously Sergio's. And I just stepped in and grabbed it. I was dehydrated during the week straight after my previous win. I was struggling to keep my form. It was very erratic. And I just grabbed it. I just took it by the scruff of the neck right at the right moment. Timed it perfect. Got in the lead with a hole to go, two holes to go, took it and won it. So I kind of got an exciting one. I kind of got a very satisfying one. And then I kind of got one that wasn't mine, that, you know, I won't use the word stolen. Maybe it was a bit ugly. I'm not really sure, but that tends to be certainly the most fun. Mm. So an exciting, a satisfying and a fun one.
And would you say that that's your strongest part of the game, like your mental side of it, like that sort of...
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of us live and die by it. I certainly have with the mental game. I seem to be very good with my back to the wall under pressure. I've give me a 20-footer on the last green to win and I'm more likely to hold it. You know, sometimes you could give me the biggest, widest fairway. Like my tee shot on the 72nd hole in Carnoustie. I'd driven the ball the best I'd ever driven it for 35 holes and I stood in that tee and I was overconfident. And what happens if you're overconfident, you get up in the tee, I'm going to bust it down there, I'm going to hit the shot. You get to the top of your backswing, you haven't prepared yourself for anything. You get a tiny bit of doubt and because you weren't prepared for that, it manifests itself in a big panic. Whereas I should have gotten that tee and gone, oh my God, there's out of bounds left, there's water short, there's a bunker dead straight in front of me. Oh, there's water right. What am I going to do here? Am I going to hit driver? Okay, you're going to hit driver. Okay, you've decided that. Where are you going? Right, I'm going to hit it there. I'm committed to that. I'm going to aim there. And you're narrowing everything. So when you get to the top of your backswing and you have a panic, well, I was expecting it, you know, and so you don't react to it. So the same thing with somebody going... Like if you were going to do a talk in front of people and you're very anxious, if you visualize it a few times, when you go to do the talk, it's never going to feel as bad and you're not going to react as bad. Whereas if you think you're going to breeze through that talk, you do no preparation, you get in there, you're breezing through, something goes wrong. That's when you see some people panic because they weren't expecting it. And it blows up and it's much more magnified if you weren't expecting it. So, yeah, that's my biggest failing. After I make a birdie, I'm dreadful in the next tee box and easy tee shots. Those things are red flags to me. When I get ahead in a match, like even as an amateur, when I was playing somebody, I used to have to build them up. I used to have to go out in the tee and say, this guy's going to beat me. This guy's going to beat me 6-5. Yeah. You know, I'd have to get against people I should be like, I'm higher ranked or much better than I still had to hype it up to get myself all G'd up and excited. And I haven't lost it. My last tournament I won at the whole classic, I was cruising And I double bogeyed the 16th. Again, got a little bit lax. And then I had to birdie the last two to win. I always make it dramatic.
Oh, very, very good. And just, yeah, so just like the final question here, Padraig, is just about, it's about like improving the game. Obviously, we had a lot about maintaining club head speed. You know, something that you're very, very good at. What would be one word of advice you'd give for someone wanting to improve the game of golf?
It obviously changes for different levels. You know, if you're a decent player, a lot of it would be to do with your routines. You know, you've got to, essentially with a routine, it makes no difference what you're thinking about. Like, we've seen players play great by tucking their elbow, by focusing on the leg. It makes no difference. But you have to be committed to it and you can't keep changing your mind. So if you want to have a good routine, it doesn't, if you focus on the target or you focus on your takeaway or your just stick to one thing, make that decision before you step up to the ball and don't add or change it. You know, so if you decide I'm going to hit this 6 footer right lip, walk, and you're going to focus on the target, walk up, focus on the target. Don't start thinking I've got to hit it softer or easier or harder, or is it going to break more? You have to make a decision and stick to it. So that's routine covered. Generally for people who strike the ball badly, you know, who especially people who are athletic and come to the game of golf and they're not any, you know, they were athletic, they could play all sports and now they're playing golf and they're not playing it very well. They're not as good as people that they should be as good as. Generally, they're not moving. They're trying to keep their feet still. They're trying to keep their head down. So I would say you've got to get a bit of movement in your game. And it's very easy to go. There's so many social media channels now that will show you. It really is. You've got to move your feet. You've got to do a lot of stepping drills. While you do want to keep an eye on the ball, you don't want to keep your head down. Movement. Make it more natural. So, yeah, I suppose this would be the thing I would say. If you play the sport, come to golf and play, do the exact same thing. Your hips and feet move the same as you would playing tennis. Your arms and torso move the same as if you're skipping a stone in the water. Who hasn't skipped a stone in water? Mm. And that's a golf swing. So kind of try and think what you were good at and try and relate that to golf rather than thinking golf is this new alien sport. In the end of the day, you're just swinging a stick.
Yeah. So it's one of the great contradictions. As soon as certainly a lot of lessons that you get, it's so much of it is geared towards stopping movements rather than actually moving in a kind of way. I think, right? Like you said, like keep your head down, don't turn too much, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's about restrictions. It's about stopping things. When you do get, certainly when I was coaching, getting people in who were so restricted in their movement that they just couldn't hit it. Like they were just so in their own heads about it.
Yeah, I think unfortunately when people come to the game, they think that they're going to be able to hit every shot straight down the middle.
Mm.
And in that search to hit everything perfect, they bring so much fear in that they start constraining things rather than going, I'm going to swing away, I'm going to see where the ball is going, and then I'm going to try and moderate that swing a little bit to control it rather than just like... if I was teaching a beginner, I probably wouldn't let them hit a ball for a couple of months. That's extreme. I let them chip and putt, but essentially I get them swinging back and forth. I then get them hitting the ground. Amateurs don't know where the ground is. You've got to be able to hit the ground. You've really got to be able to sort of clip the ground with your club. And then the third thing, which we talked about earlier, I get them face awareness. So that's really short, really open, until they can start modifying that to a little open, a little short. But they have to get face awareness. And I think that's something that's... And you only get face awareness by hitting crooked shots, by hitting big hooks and big cuts. You don't get them by hitting it straight. Stop trying to hit the ball straight. That's going to happen 3 months down the road. It doesn't start that way.
Love that. Absolutely love that. Well, Padraig, thank you so, so much for joining us. It's been a brilliant day. Can't wait for you guys to kind of look at you, Kieran. Can't wait for you guys to see the videos that we've produced. So stay tuned. Thank you so, so much. It's been an incredible day.
Thanks, Peter.
Appreciate
really enjoyed
that.
Enjoyed it.
So, Padraig Harrington, one absolute legend. He genuinely is one of my golfing heroes. So to be able to kind of film with him and sit next to him and go through all this thing, it was quite the experience. And it was halfway through, I was thinking I should probably say more. I should probably like kind of involve myself in this conversation as like a host of the podcast.
Mm.
I was like, nah.
I'm enjoying myself.
I'm just listening to this man.
Right, he just goes and goes and goes and then elaborates on each point and then expands each point again. Yeah. It's amazing.
He always seems to be very kind of well thought out and concise with what he's saying as well. Mm. So
very well media trained.
I just think it's him.
Yeah. He's just lovely.
Yeah, I just think it's him.
Just loves a chat.
Why would you want to be media trained with us?
Yeah. Oh, that's
what,
true.
The least media trained people ever.
What about this as Polish media right now?
And that's why you love us, hopefully.
Yeah. Right. Subscribe.
Please. So yeah, it was amazing. He said some very nice things as well. So
he thinks not only are you going to qualify for the Open, he thinks you've got a chance of winning it.
I won't go that far. I won't go that far. He was quite complimentary, and he again just gave me kind of lessons about mostly sports psychology and like what I need to do differently. And we did take that advice into the round the day after, and it did pay immediate dividends, really.
I think he's got all the more reason to believe you can. I mean, you literally almost qualify for a PGA Tour event.
Oh. What a segue, though.
That's so good.
It's unbelievable.
Thank well you. Done.
Everyone just has signed of that. Wow.
It was bloody good.
It was a smooth segue, but it was also a very sharp turn.
It was
like a perfectly executed handbrake turn.
Yeah.
Oh.
Like a drift.
I feel like I'm in Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift,
right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We kind of ruined the segue now, but it was too good.
That's okay.
That's the punishment. It was too good of a segue.
It was so good that we all
had to stop.
Wow, we need to talk about this.
Going back to that like unpolished feel that we that was too clean. Okay,
like and subscribe.
So unmedia trained. Right.
Yeah.
Myrtle Beach. Let's delve right into it. So our video's out. The Myrtle Beach Q video is out, so you've seen. Hopefully, if you've not watched it, this does include spoilers, so be warned. But I didn't qualify for the PGA Tour event in Myrtle Beach. However, if you've not watched it, you'll know that I actually played pretty well.
Yeah,
really
big,
well.
Big however.
Really
big
well.
However.
So it was an incredible, incredible event, and it was definitely the most nervous I've been on a golf course. I won't talk you through every shot, but I do need to talk you through my first tee shot. So, like, one of the things about warming up and getting ready for a round, one thing which everybody says you need to do is before you leave the range, practice your first tee shot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Visualize it, hit it, cool.
Mm-hmm.
The first hole was like 390, kind of around the corner. Remember, that's about 380.
Yeah.
Kind of around the corner, tiny dog leg, but it's a hybrid off the first or an iron. Just to not reach the far bunker, leave yourself a wedge in.
You're not mashing driver over the trees?
Not mashing driver.
No, because we're playing smart golf.
It's just not that hole.
Right.
Yeah. Like, okay. Got you. You'd have to be an exceptional driver of the golf ball, which I was that day, actually, to be fair. But I'm warming up and I'm hitting it all right. Not too bad, a bit scrappy, but I'm hitting it okay. A bit nervous, obviously. And I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, right, okay, I've got 5 minutes to kind of get down to the tee.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I need to hit some hybrids. So I've hit a hybrid. It's all right. Not too bad. Going to hit a hybrid. I'm like, okay, I've got to get going. So I'll have one more. Okay.
Oh, God.
I've hit the biggest snap hook you've ever seen in your life. Now, the first hole at Myrtle Beach, if you hit it left, you're re-teeing.
Yeah.
Real bad.
Yeah.
Real bad. So I think, right, okay, it's fine. I'll just get another one out, went through my routine. I hit a bigger snap hook. I've hit this thing all the way back to South Carolina.
It hooks so much, it hits you in the back.
It's a boomerang of epic proportions. And I'm like, oh my God, right, okay, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Just get one more, just hit like a fade.
Yeah.
Just hit a fade. I've hit a pull snap hook.
Podrick, we need you right now.
This all makes sense now, because when like we were sort of preparing, you were like, he kept hitting shots. And we were like, what? Why is he keeping going?
So I'm like, right, I've got to go. I can't be late.
The reason I didn't make the cut is because I missed my tee time.
So I'm like, get to the first tee. And it's nothing but a hybrid.
Yep.
And my club at the time, we've got 90 degree, then a 22 degree hybrid. Next up was a 3-wood. It's not a 3-wood and it's not a driver.
Yep.
It is a hybrid.
You could have hit iron, but you would have had a long shot back in. And
it's that one club.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm struggling to get this bloody tea in the ground. And then the announcer comes on. Well, can we try and find the audio of this announcer?
Yeah.
Now on the tee, playing out of Manchester in the United Kingdom, Peter Finch.
Honestly, he introduced me like I was a conquering gladiator.
Yeah.
And it didn't make me feel any better.
That's what I'm hoping, mate.
So I teed up this hybrid, and I've not quite closed my eyes when I've hit it, but there was a definite, at the top of the swing, a bit of a, just screw it. Just screw it. And I just nailed this tight little draw.
God, that must have felt so good.
It felt amazing, but it was such a relief.
Mm.
It was such a relief. It wasn't like excitement. It was just, oh my God, thank God.
Oh, it left the tee box.
Yeah, like the breath that I let out, it felt like I've been holding it for 4 days. Just like, oh honestly. And like I said, watch the video, I won't talk you through it, but I drove it great, hit some funky iron shots. We didn't really strike it well, but managed to be level par. And I think at that time I was 2-3 shots off the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Eagled the 15th.
Yeah, I think
excellent.
I think going down 15. No, 14.
Eagle 14.
Eagled 14. Going down 15, you asked what the score was. 15. No, I'm 15. Getting this. Down 16, you asked what the score was. And I think at that point you were 4 back.
Yeah.
At that point. But I know this is such a, you know, it's if, buts, and maybes. But genuinely, if everything kind of just sort of fell into place a little bit, you really did play well enough to be in that final group and even get into the playoff.
Yeah. I think looking back on it, if a few things had gone a little bit differently, I could have made the playoff.
Yeah.
I was driving it well enough.
Yeah.
I hit a few funky putts, but I did also hole some really good par putts.
Really good putts.
So it's kind of like, it's, you know, it's one of those where everyone playing could have said the same thing. But out of all the YouTubers, I was second after George.
Which I think was the initial goal, was to finish as high above the, as high in the YouTubers ranking as possible.
We said this when there was a leaderboard and then a leaderboard within the leaderboard of everyone, you know, and it was nice
to
see.
They almost should have had them like different colours.
Yeah, like they usually have their colleges.
This person makes videos for a living. This person is a tour pro.
PGA Tour coverage, usually they sometimes have a little like college logo.
You could have
the YouTube logo.
Yeah, they have the tight list where all the tight list players play the tight list ball. They should have that.
At this moment in time, I haven't fully edited the video completely, so that's going in.
That's a great idea. Idea,
well done.
Yeah,
you could have everyone like just anyone who's like a YouTuber, just have the YouTube symbol.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, great.
And then I have the. We'll do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, well done everyone for contributing to the video that isn't out yet.
No, that was great.
But no, it was probably your, for me anyway. I mean, I don't know what Jacob thinks, but that was the best round I've ever seen you play.
In the
circumstances, everything going on, I really genuinely believe that.
I think it was definitely the most nervous, because that's my first 18-hole comp I've played in years. And to kind of hold it together, to stick to my routine, to only really hit, I might have hit maybe 7-8 bad shots, but pretty much the rest of it was solid. I drove it
You drove it really well.
And like then that, Brandon, the caddy as well, was great.
Brandon
as well.
Was great.
Like,
yeah.
Great to bounce fantastic. Off and everything.
It was 13, 14, 15, where you had the par three, where you best iron shot of the day, and you missed the part, short part.
Oh, yeah.
That's like a little moment. I mean, you obviously didn't make it and then went to go and eagle the par five, which obviously is great as it is to bounce back off that. But then the next hole after that, you made a really good par out of the trees, good par. And then even 16, like you had a good look at birdie, which just slipped to the left.
That sucked.
If those two putts went in, you probably then go down the last and you're 1 under, 2 under.
Mm.
Yeah. So I mean, you go into full attack mode at that point. You're there.
Yeah, it was close.
Yeah,
it was close.
I agree with Kieran. I think it's probably some of the best golf I've seen you play, and certainly from like a even taking the work perspective out of it. Like obviously, you're one of my really good friends. So like, I was so proud of like how you played that day because of like not only the golf that you played, but just also the environment you did it in, and it showed like you can do it at that moment in time, which was, it was so good to see. And it was the most fun I've had filming.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was the filming experience like? Because it's a bit different to what we normally do, where we kind of almost have the course to ourselves. Yeah. You know, we sometimes will let groups through if we're taking too long or whatever, but like, in this situation, you're kind of beholden to how quickly everyone is playing. Mm. You can't get in the way. You can't really say to the people playing in the event, oh, sorry, don't walk in front of the tracer. Like, what was the filming experience like?
I'll just quickly start. So I think that was, it was definitely different for sure. I mean, for starters, every group had three other sets of cameras that were filming for the video that came out on Tuesday last week. So there was a, it wasn't a scrum. Like it was, I think they thought it was going to be a bit more of a, but we just had to kind of work stuff out. And I think Kieran had probably a harder job in filming it than I did, because I was just B cam and I was more on the side where Kieran was up on the tee, and especially trying to film for tracers, like very smartly, Kieran moved across to the left instead of behind, because you had the other players who, you know, you can't shout at them like, tracer, tracer, kind of like getting in the way.
On the 16th, you did a great drive and then you were sort of walking to, you were walking into it, and I was like, oh, beat, oh,
yes.
Then I was like, I stopped myself. I was like, you know, I can't obviously do that. But it was very, 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 very good.
I think the only time it was an issue was on the 18th. Do you remember when they had to change?
The audio,
I was getting
thing.
Annoyed then.
Yeah. They had to change like the batteries out of kind of everything, really, and then get everything retuned in. And I was on the tee. I was going down the last level par, kind of eagle to have any kind of chance.
What we'd like now is a nice long stoppage to get you out of your rhythm.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you'd gone through the process and you teed the ball up and you kind of taken your step back and you were lining it up. And this bloke, and I understand Ashton. People have got to do their job. Yeah. I get that. But this guy's running around behind the tee, but obviously like behind Pete trying to hit, which already is a golf etiquette no-no. You like shouldn't be doing it. So it sort of was going on and people were getting a little bit irritated, but it kept going on until it got to a point where someone said, look, the golf is more important now. Mm. We'll worry about that after people have hit their shot. Just let him hit now. And this is where I got annoyed, was the guy still kept moving and people were going, stop. And he was like trying to like move.
Dodge past him.
I was like, what the dude, hell? Just stand still. Literally just stand still. And I was so glad you hit a good drive then, because if you didn't.
Oh. Well, that's the thing, because it was probably about a five, 6 minute delay on the tee while they got everything sorted. And it's fine. I could deal with it. Apart from the fact I needed an eagle and it was out of bounds left and there was water right.
Yeah, if I'm 14 over and there's literally no chance. Oh, it doesn't, I'll take as long as you want. Oh, it doesn't matter.
But yeah, when you're faced with a mega tight tee shot.
Yeah, what I don't need is some lemon over there causing a problem.
I was struggling to I had to make sure I didn't look down the hole, because every time I looked down the hole, my eyes were like going left, upwards, out of bounds.
Yeah,
it was drifting around. There's a wall there. Okay, fine. Enough. So just turn around, trying to keep it light. Mm. And then like Checker said, there's that the guy just like dodging around. And I was like, oh my God. But I managed to hit it. It wasn't my best drive, but I managed to get it down the middle, which was good. Honestly, it was. Yeah. I mean, as far as like the event and the concept, it'd be interesting to see how it goes down. Obviously, we're recording this before we know properly what's happened. So it's going to be good. I hope everyone enjoys it, and hopefully it's the start of something regular.
Yes.
Yeah, that was something that I kind of got the vibe of. I was like, this ain't done. Like, this is going to happen again. Yeah. Where, I don't know, but this is going
to
happen again.
Yeah, it's a bit of a call to the smaller tour events to say, look, this is, I wonder how much it will affect the viewing now that they know kind of how people got into the event. And, you know, it's probably a call to some of those smaller tour events to say, look, there's loads of things you could be doing to reaching this whole new audience that you don't have access to currently. So I'd love to see it become a regular thing.
Yeah. I think probably the thing, something they will change, I imagine, because it was George and Matt Atkins in the playoff.
Yeah.
George really should have got through.
Yeah.
He just had a bad last hole, which he was so gutted about it afterwards, you can understand. Lost in the playoff, Matt got through. Matt's a great player. I imagine if a YouTuber with a following would have got through, again, that would have translated more into the actual event.
And you got the impression that the guys who organized it, kind of, they wanted that. They wanted the YouTuber to be there, especially at least get them up there.
I think there was a little bit of fear because this hasn't been done before, first off. It's not been done before. I think there was a little bit of fear going into it, is that if it was just YouTubers, just social media people, what if
Someone the shoots winning six score over
was like a 78.
Yeah.
And then it would have been like, well, this is just ridiculous. But
and then that person comes dead last.
Yeah. Obviously, like, oh, no. That would have killed it probably before it even began.
Yeah, so it's probably the right move to have.
I think so. I think it was safe.
The like backup plan of these guys are Korn Ferry or, you know, playing on mini tours and stuff. So yeah.
And it showed off how good YouTube golfers are. Like, I think there can be a bit of a stigma to say that, you know, you can retake shots and, you know, things like that. Where when you're in a tournament situation, you've got a card in your hand. Like, it's obviously very different. Yeah, like, you tied with a guy who played on Live.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
You did play very, very well. Of the bits I've seen, it looks like you were in a completely different zone to what we've seen you in before. So
yeah, it's weird. I think I've given myself, and certainly after we've played in this before we filmed with Podrick, but saying this to the guys, like having that conversation with Podrick and getting everything kind of in my head, I almost feel like I've got a bit more permission to take it a bit more seriously. I don't know if that it's stupid. Like, you should be going through your routine and concentrating anyway in every shot, but it's hard when you're making YouTube videos because obviously you gotta make it.
Yeah, if we filmed a video of you playing to your ultimate serious, you wouldn't talk to the camera. You'd be thinking, you'd maybe talk to your caddy, and we wouldn't know what club you're hitting, how far you've got in, what shot shape you're trying to hit, where you're aiming. Like, we would just be watching you play golf, which obviously if you play great golf, it's still good to watch. But the hard thing about doing it on YouTube is having to also present to the camera at the same time.
I'm quite interested, obviously, at this point you're watching, I will have already seen, but I'm looking forward to seeing what the comments on the video will be like, because even though Pete and his caddy Brandon are mic'd up, they certainly don't talk as much as a usual video. They certainly don't talk as loud. It's all kind of that process conversation of kind of doing it all. And hopefully the more of the drama of it will come through the video, because that's what it is about. Mm. You're not going to get loads of entertainment in terms of Pete being funny kind of thing.
Yeah, there's zero memes in this video.
I will also apologize. Not that I haven't left any in, but there are some bleeps, Pete, I will say.
Yeah.
You had some...
that's what I mean. Like, I wanted him to be just how you would approach like a normal competitive round. I mean, I didn't talk to you really the whole round. So like, I wanted you to... sort of keep, yeah, it was probably great.
He was like, can we go get a spice bag after this?
Yeah. So, you know, I just wanted you to just do your thing and just like, you know, it was a competitive round, you know, for the PGA Tour. It was a really massive deal. And I really, really hope it happens again. Really, really hope.
I think that was maybe the only time I did call myself and I kind of slipped back into YouTube mode a little bit, is if I'd hit like a bad shot or there was something that went wrong and I did throw out an old Tyrrell Hatton or two. I was a bit like, all right, okay, try not to do that. It didn't work in the end.
No, it didn't.
You finally worked it out on, I think it was 12, where you missed, was that the short par four? Shortish par four. You had a birdie putt. Was that 12?
12, yeah.
The drive, it was like a bit of a...
Oh, yeah.
And you kept your birdie putt short.
Yeah.
And instead of swearing and using all the profanity that you've been using previously, you just said and just stated, bad word, bad word, bad word. Bad word. And I can keep that in.
Yeah, those are great. I love those.
But there are, I will say, as you say, if you've watched the video, there are some bleeps and there could have been more.
Yeah, more bleeps got cut out.
The 17th scared me, I tell you. Because I saw
the par three.
I was zooming in and I saw that ball go over the edge. And I didn't want to say anything because like a lot of people, you know, didn't really know. And I was like,
editing that back and watching that clip for the first time, and I'm actually amazed
I don't know how that ball stayed up.
I saw it, and it's the reason, because it just basically just hopped into the thick and it just popped it in. But after seeing that clip, for sure.
It's like a semi-island green. Mm. And I thought it was 180. And I thought, 9-9 would be safe.
Downwind. It was downwind.
And you're juiced as
downhill,
well.
Downwind.
He's not taking performance enhancing drugs.
Allegedly.
I meant his, you know, his...
Allegedly.
Just spice bags.
A bag of spice. that is the best 9-9 I've ever struck in my life. Oh. When I hit it, I was like,
oh no.
Yeah. The bat was like,
it felt really good. I don't care where it went.
Yeah. Oh, never hit a 9-9 like that in my life.
So you didn't qualify. You did represent yourself and our country particularly well, which is excellent work. There will also be, you know, the next video on the main channel will be you trying to make, well, actually not the next one, you trying to make the cut at the event.
Yeah, we played the course after.
Yeah.
Then we kind of set a score to see if we could make the cup. So.
Yeah, so you'll get to see Pete playing that tournament, kind of.
Sort of.
Yeah.
He's going to be on a leaderboard. It's made up, but yeah.
At one point, I was genuinely thinking that video is just nothing now because he's going to be in the event. We're going to, you know what I mean?
Like, the video, yeah, like, the video would have been exactly the same, but it would have just been the coverage.
Yeah. Literally, one point I was like, you know, because we were sort of checking the scores, and like, yeah, you were doing great. You know, you were doing really, really well.
I would like to know, and we'll probably see this when the video comes out. About how I was.
Yeah. So obviously you birdied early, so you went under par quite early on.
What birdie? That was that.
Which could have been an eagle as well. Yeah. That's what I mean. There was the eagle putt. There was like three birdie putts that just missed and you left short.
It's the
three putt on nine. Like, you literally could have done it.
Yeah. That was
smelly. That.
Oh, ninth was smelly.
Yeah. You could have done it.
Yeah.
Next time.
And skied the 10th tee shot.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
Oh, wow.
Hit it in the water after that.
Like, oh, yeah. Oh, the water shot was annoying.
Oh, yeah.
That also, another one from the angle that Kieran got, looked fine, but it never was.
I thought I did such a good shot.
Wow, I didn't know about the water ball.
Yeah.
But
then, I forgot about that.
Because this is the thing about swinging around. So I hit it in the water, but then chipped an okay chip, but then hole like a really good like 12, 15 footer for a bogey, which is great. You know, kept my momentum.
Your driving and short game, excellent. Irons in the middle, not quite as good.
Yeah.
It's been the story of the last kind of few months, really, hasn't it?
Not this trip.
Irons were good.
Okay.
So,
lovely.
After that chat, guys, make sure you check. We have a guest the player.
Hello, and welcome back to the 2024 Rough Cut Open, the game where your knowledge of golf history is more important than your ability to actually hit the ball. How the game works. At the end of each episode, I describe the life and career of a famous golfer. And after each clue, these accomplished professionals write down who they think it is. However many hints it takes them to get home is how many shots they took on that hole. So, if you get a par 5 after just 4 clues, you would finish that hole in 1 under par. Here are the current standings. Let's rejoin the action as the players tee off. Yeah. Welcome back to Guess the Player. You're welcome. Oh, you were saying to him. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he doesn't say thank you to you.
Yeah. I'm the course adjudicator, designer, and rules official.
Tell us a story about the course.
Tell you a story about the course. So let me just get my cane out and smash some lights first. We're playing a par 4 today, everyone.
Ooh.
Slightly longer than last week's one that everyone got hole-in-ones on.
Hole-in-one. Thank you.
Charlie got Discord hole-in-one as well. These two.
Eagle.
Eagles.
Bird. Okay. Bird. Big bird. Little bird, sorry.
Play along at home. You've just seen the rules. Here we go.
I'm going to win this one.
You're going
to... Wow.
Yep. Okay. Clairvoyant. Shot number one. This golfer was born in Grant, Florida on the 7th of December, 1986. I've gone back to my old ways of giving you the birth date. This player was born in Grant, Florida on the 7th of December, 1986. Which makes him 37?
Oh, my God.
1986.
Correct.
Grant, Florida.
It's not Grant Hall, that.
It's not. He formed his own hometown. He's named after his hometown. And you were born in Jacob Hereford as well, weren't you?
He was born in Florida, I think.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Yeah.
But not in Grant. Well, he might be in Grant.
That's what I don't know.
Hey, listen, you never know.
Is there a place called Peter in Lancashire somewhere?
I hope not.
Peter's Head. Scotland.
I do like the thought that Mr. Horvat looked around. And what are you going to call him? Like, looks around in Grant.
Yeah, why not?
In Grant State Hospital. Grant. It's just like,
ask the doctor, what's your name?
Right, okay, so.
This is a big player, by the way.
It's tricky because I can't remember who we've had now as well.
Yeah, we are going deep now, aren't we?
Yeah, that's a great shout.
We should probably have detailed down. Not here so much, but just somewhere where
I've got the list of all the players we've had.
Yeah, can you just read them out quick?
No, this will be cut. No, I'm not going to read them out.
Please.
No.
Should have cited the rules before we started.
If you wanted it, you should have done it before the tee shots were hit.
If you wanted it.
Are we playing preferred lies? Well, too late now. You've already preferred your lie, haven't you? Shot number two.
Still win the rules.
Hang on.
No, there's no hang on. Get on with it.
Well, you do have to hang on because I have to write a name down.
Shot number two. This player. You've all got one?
Yeah. No, I sky my tee shot, so.
You just sacked it off.
Yeah. I'm hitting provisional.
Yeah, okay, excellent. This player turned professional in 2009 and secured their PGA Tour card through Q School for the 2010 season. This player turned professional in 2009 and secured their PGA Tour card through Q School for the 2010 season. Shot number two for Eags. So glad you haven't all got it.
Well, I hit a provisional, so technically I'm going to be hitting my third on the next, so I don't have to write anyone down for this one either.
you should just guess, though.
But if I'm going to be completely honest with you, like, my mind has gone blank for any 37-year-old tour pros.
Yeah. From Florida.
Yeah. Like,
what was the year?
37 is always like an 86.
I have read the question twice. I'm not going to do it.
I remember December 7th.
I always think of, like, the younger selection of guys, maybe the early 30s, late 20s, and then you're 40, legacies. 50, 60, yep. Yeah.
So this is a middle...
I think it's hard to put when someone's middle, 37.
Middle of the pack, age-wise.
Yeah.
Not in the early stages of his career, because he turned pro in 2010, but also, he's not done yet.
He's not done yet.
I'll keep it. There's no reason for me to change.
Shot number three. This is for Birdie. This player attended the University of Florida, and whilst there, he studied sports management. So you know it's a man. He was.
Oh my God! I think I know who it is.
He was a four-time All-American. This player attended University of Florida. Whilst there, he studied sports management. He was a four-time All-American.
I have a feeling we might have had this person already, but in the last one, but not of who I've put down. But I can't remember.
Who did you put down? I'll tell you now. You've written it.
I think actually we have had it.
Okay, don't tell me.
Damn it.
How you feeling? Birdie did it.
Yeah, I don't know.
You don't know? Okay, good. That's the answer I'm after. Every single time I ask you, I want you to say, I don't know.
I mean, if we've already had this player, you know, there's a course design that you're kind of repeating your design.
I'm pretty sure I've done this
hole.
Yeah. It's a tribute hole.
Yeah, 17 to sort.
Yeah, it's just slightly shorter than that, and the tree's not quite the same. Okay, so this is your tap in for par. Uh-huh. He has recently become hooked on snowboarding. His website says, as a Florida boy, I'm not going to do his accent. As a Florida boy, I never experienced snow sports, but Brittany grew up skiing in the winter. Yeah. Aspen, Colorado is our favorite vacation spot.
Yeah.
He has become hooked on snowboarding recently. His website says, as a Florida boy, I never experienced snow sports, but Brittany grew up skiing in the winter. Aspen, Colorado is our favorite vacation spot.
I think I have it, but I might not.
The wife's name has helped me there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How do you know it's his wife?
Because I know it is Brittany's, his wife's name.
Okay. All right.
Well, all right.
Why would it be some random...
Britney Spears. Could be Britney Spears.
Who regularly goes snowboarding with Britney Spears?
Yeah,
she don't get out a lot.
She's
not allowed. Did not know this.
She's been replaced.
She goes skiing.
He goes regularly snowboarding with Britney Spears.
Didn't know it.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you go.
She's not allowed.
Breaking news.
She's been replaced by a doppelganger anyway, so no matter. She's also under house arrest. Have you written one down? You have. Okay, excellent. If you haven't got it now, give me the over par for this hole. Here comes your bogey putt. In a 2013 US Open, today's golfer held the joint lead with Phil Mickelson at the halfway stage of the tournament. Playing in his first major as a professional, he was one of only two players under par after the second round, hitting all 18 of Merion's greens in regulation.
Harder than a hole in one.
Is it now?
Apparently.
Statistically less likely.
There's a video coming up. In the 2013 US Open, today's golfer held a joint lead with Phil Mickelson at the halfway stage of the tournament. Playing in his first major as a professional, he was one of only two players under par after the second round, hitting all 18 of Merion's greens in regulation.
It's very good.
That's good.
That's golf right there.
He's golfed it.
He really golfed it 18 times.
My man's stuck over there.
Today.
You want a spice bag, bro?
Not today, yeah, not today. I need a spice
Spice
bag.
Up your answers, yeah, fam. Yeah, you get me?
It's really annoying because I've definitely said this person before.
Well, that's it now, isn't it?
It is.
Double bogey.
Yeah. If you haven't got it now, you're going to get double bogey for this hole. However, it is the worst you can do, so don't worry too much.
I hope I've written the right person.
Here we go. You hope you've put the right person.
I hope so.
Well, I'm about to tell you. Renowned West Ham United fan and friend of the channel, today's golfer is 2024 Corrales Punta Cana winner, Billy Horschel.
That was nice.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I did.
Birdie.
I was a birdie as well.
Excellent.
I had a...
You could double it. Yeah.
I don't know. I might be completely wrong, but I have a feeling that we'd had him. But
we have not.
Have
I
we
don't
not?
Think okay. No, I don't mean we've had him. No.
It was, we have had... do you want me to do last season as well?
No, I trust that the course designer would not.
Oh, I'm not going to replete holes.
No, absolutely.
Hold on, just checking. Yeah, I definitely this haven't.
This is the first time that my college knowledge has helped me.
Right.
Because I know he runs, like, he now basically sponsors or runs a program with Florida now to do coaching and all that kind of stuff.
So we've had on this course this year, Oberg, Day, Mickelson, Westwood, Neiman, Stewart, Scheffler, Mickelson, Westwood.
Rahm.
Neiman. Bloody hell, where the bloody hell was the rest of them? Oh, then Schauffele. and then we had Nelly Korda, and now we've had Billy Horschel.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Bloody hell. Yeah. We'll make a list.
You probably cut that out, that's what I was saying.
So what, you were a birdie?
Yes, I was a birdie. That is a three.
I also was a three.
The Discord, unfortunately,
doubled
it.
Charlie, no.
Yeah, so you two will take a share. You'll have one each, which means Peter Finch is up in the series.
I am a Scotty Scheffler of this, by
six.
The way.
Six, Discord four, you three, Kieran one.
I've hit the front, and I'm not going to back up. I'm just going to keep on going live.
However, if Carly gives birth...
that would be a surprise.
That would be unexpected. Yeah, that would be quite the surprise. That would, yeah, that'd throw a spanner in the works, isn't it?
I don't think he was expecting that.
Wow. That was great fun sitting in the play centre on the ferry.
Peter might actually become Pedro and disappear.
In Mexico, it's looking this time.
You see him in the crowd at the Corrales Punta Cana.
Driving around the mower. That's where he went. Hiding in plain view.
I abandoned my child!
Just to assure everyone, I wouldn't actually abandon my child.
That's disclaimer.
Yeah, no. Probably.
Oh, God.
So, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for being part of the podcast. It's been absolutely lovely to have you along. Big thank you to Podrake for coming on, extolling his words of wisdom.
Paddy.
And the video will be coming out very soon of our match. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. See you soon.
Bye, everyone.
See ya.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.